Are you ready to talk baseball? Well, step up to the plate. You're listening to Passion for the Pastime. And here's your host, Walter.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? And welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Hope you are doing well, staying safe, and being healthy out there. I know I am. I am excited. I just got back from Disneyland. It seems like I just got back yesterday, but it's been about a week. Got my Disneyland tickets. I told you guys I was going to go to Disneyland. I think I mentioned it the last time I was talking to Martin Gallegos of the Oakland Athletics. We were talking about Disneyland opening up possibility. If he was going to go, well, guess what, Martin? I went. How's everybody doing? Welcome back to the podcast. It is Memorial Day weekend, and however, I'm not going to be going to Disneyland over the weekend. We got baseball. Man, wasn't it the weirdest thing last year when we had no baseball on Memorial Day? It was the weirdest thing. That is what you get baseball, you get hot dogs, you got the barbecue going, you have some beers. That's what happens on Memorial Day weekend. Well, hey, we got baseball this weekend. We got a lot of it, and we are going to be diving into Chicago once again. And you guys might think that this is like a Chicago White Sox podcast because we talk a lot of White Sox news, a lot of White Sox, storylines, because they've been the talk of baseball. I mean, Tony La Russa, and this will probably be the only time I mention his name in this podcast because I'm not gonna try to mention his name at all in my interview with beat writer because that is who we're talking to coming up here. We're talking with beat writer for the Chicago White Sox, Southsiders. By the way, Southside uniforms, check those out. I might get one. Might go get me a Tim Anderson one. Those are fire. I retweeted it on my Twitter, but I retweeted a retweet of Scott Merkin. That's who we're going to be talking with, Chicago White Sox beat writer Scott Merkin for MLB.com. We're going to be talking with him about all the news headlines, but we're not going to talk La Russa. I feel like everyone has been talking about La Russa, the 3-0 count, and that has just been beat into the ground. by this point, because I took about a week of vacation. So again, welcome back to the podcast. I'm glad you guys are back. I am glad to be back. I am excited to be doing this podcast once again. Took a little bit of a vacation, so to speak. Went to LA. Went with my niece. Went with my girlfriend. Went with my family. It was a great time. It was a great time out. I'm like throwing. throwing baseball slogans in my podcast now. It's a great time out. Bart, you're there. No, let's not go down that rabbit hole. So I took a little bit of a vacation, and while everything was going on, the White Sox were buzzing. Tony La Russa, again, second time I mentioned it. That will probably be the only time I mention it. Only time. I'm trying here. But with all that situation going on in Chicago with the manager of the White Sox and the team, the 3-0 counts, it has been beat into the ground. So I'm not even going to talk about that with Scott Merkin because we got tons of stuff to talk about. I mean, the White Sox, I think everyone, when Eloy Jimenez went down, they were like, all right, maybe they're not going to be as good as we anticipated. Well, hey, they're in first place in the AL Central. They have a run differential of plus 73 at this moment in time. We are about 50 games in. White Sox, everyone else is kind of at 50. White Sox are at 49, all right? They'll be playing 50 today on Friday, May 28th. And by the way, it's May 28th. Where did the month go? My God, I was celebrating a birthday at the beginning of the month, and now we're getting into Memorial Day weekend. Baseball, everywhere, barbecue, beer. I'm down. I am ready for it. But yeah, the White Sox, did you think, if you are a White Sox fan or just a fan of the game, after seeing Eloy Jimenez, that's one thing. And then you get Luis Robert go down. Did you think that they would be in first place at this moment? And on the flip side, did you think the two teams behind them would be the Cleveland Indians, who literally have no offense and got no hit twice? I'm waiting for number three. I got to hit up Rosie when they get number three because it's coming. Their offense is abysmal. Look at me using big words. And then Kansas City Royals. Kansas City Royals are third place in the AL Central. Are you kidding? What is happening? What is happening? They're below 500. Okay, they're below 500. So Central maybe isn't up to par as, say, the NFC. I'm thinking football. The NL West. I mean, the NL West is stacked. One to three. And then you get Colorado and Arizona have 19 wins, which is about the same wins of the Detroit Tigers. But anyway, we're talking about the Central here. Did you think after the White Sox going through all of those injuries, did you think that they would be in the position that they're in right now, 50 games in? I need to tell you, no, I did not. I thought that it was going to go horrible for the new manager, for the new skipper in the South Side. And every time I say this, I'm saying the South Side more today because they just released some new unis. You guys need to check those out. I'm probably going to get one, Tim Anderson one. And I need to get that Tim Anderson chain. My God, the chain looked beautiful. Got to get the whole thing. The uniform, the pants, the high socks, the Tim Anderson chain. I'm down. I don't like the hats. I'll say I don't like the hats. But I love the unis. The unis are great. You guys need to check those out. But the White Sox, it is crazy that they are in first place at the moment. And, you know, it's really a credit to their pitching. So, I mean, we're going to talk about all of this with Scott Merkin, again, beat writer for the Chicago White Sox for MLB.com. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into Mike Shildt, what he had to say about the substances on Giovanni Gallegos on his hat during the series with the Cardinals and the White Sox earlier this week. So we're going to talk with Scott about that. And we're going to get into, you know, some Yermin Mercedes and possibly the Cuban version of Ohtani. Yeah, crazy stuff. We're going to talk about all of that coming up next. We are speaking with beat writer Scott Merkin for the Chicago White Sox of MLB.com. Coming up next, you are listening to Passion for the Pastime podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Passion for the Pastime. Your host, Walter, here. And we're going back to the South Side because the South Side, there is a lot of news going on in the South Side of Chicago. And joining me on this episode of the podcast, I have beat writer for the Chicago White Sox for MLB.com, Scott Merkin. Scott, how you doing today? And, I mean, the first 50 games they're in the books, or I guess just under 50 games for the White Sox. Very uneventful 50 games, right?
yeah, not much going on here. I was going to say I'm doing well, except it's like 45 degrees in Chicago today. I think it was 80 last weekend, but, you know, that's Chicago. Although you don't really expect to be looking for your heater to work come Memorial Day, but what we got to deal with today. I mean, both teams are home today, too, so it'll be interesting to see if they both play today.
Yeah, you know, Chicago weather was kind of a topic of what we talked about last time. Last time you were dealing with some snow on the ground. At least it's not snowing, right? I mean, that would be
not yet
bizarre.
Not yet. No, it's a weird thing. Cause I looked like for the forecast for the night game today, and it's supposed to get warmer as the day goes on. So it's like 44 right now, but it's supposed to be like 52 at first pitch. So I'm guessing with the Sox having a doubleheader Monday in Cleveland, which is, you know, if you can have a big, I mean, it's getting further in the season, so the series are getting bigger, but it's a big series because Cleveland is really the only team right now that looks like a contender with the White Sox unless the Twins turn things around. So, you know, I'm guessing with the doubleheader Monday, they probably don't want to play two doubleheaders in 3 days, although Saturday and Sunday's forecasts are great in Chicago.
The first 50 games in, do you see, are the White Sox above expectations, kind of right at your expectations? How do you think that they're going so far at this point in the season?
Well, I think they're above expectations just because, you know, you take the caliber of Eloy Jimenez, who's a Silver Slugger winner, 40 home run guy easily, you know, and Luis Robert, who's one of the best all-around talents athletically in the game and really starting to get it as a baseball player. Take them both away from any, take the equivalent away from any lineup, and man, that's a pretty good, you know, knockdown for your team. And the Sox are still winning the division. Now, the AL Central is not a good division. That's, you know, I'm not speaking out of turn on that. You know, Kansas City's probably a little better than people thought. Detroit is still, you know, far down in their rebuild. Minnesota's had an awful start, although they played better in the last, you know, eight days or so. And Cleveland can pitch, but really I don't think can hit enough to stay with the White Sox. So, you know, I think this, I still believe the White Sox will have to work harder not to win this division as opposed to win this division if things stay the same. Now, maybe Cleveland adds a big bat. Maybe Minnesota go. I remember in 2006, Minnesota finished the season like 36-10 to win the division. So, you know, you can't account for that. But, yeah, I think a little bit of surprise because of the fact that, you know, the pitching has just been unbelievable. People knew it would be a good staff, but it's been, you know, just the starters give them a chance to win pretty much every day. I mean, I can think of maybe, geez, off the top of my head, just three starts that have really been, like, non-competitive where the team was down, you know, early on. And even a couple of those were, you know, like, it wasn't too far. I mean, the one that stands out is Lucas in Boston on Patriots Day, and that's pretty much about it in terms of, like, really bad starts for the team this year. Maybe Keuchel's had a couple, too. But just to make a long answer short, the pitching's been great. The defense hasn't been tremendous. The hitting's been, you know, good overall. But, I mean, you think about it, you have those two injuries. Yasmani Grandal, who's a big force in that lineup, is getting on base by walking a ton. He leads the American League with 39 walks, but he's not hitting at all. Jose Abreu has 40 RBIs, but still has just really started to put it together in May, did not have a good April. Tim Anderson has been, you know, had a trip to the injured list. So, I mean, there's all sorts of things going on, just like there's all sorts of things going on with every team in baseball this year, but yet they're still atop the AL Central. So I'd say, you know, a little above, I'd say being in first is expectations met, but playing, you know, to where they are with the absences they've had is maybe a little above expectations.
Yeah, and that's the big story there. Is like how do they keep doing this? Like you mentioned, to those big names, Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez. I mean, those are big bats in that lineup, and they're still and I mean, that's credit to the starting pitching, because without those guys in the lineup, the run differential is still plus 70. So, I mean, that's amazing what they've been able to do early on in this season. And you mentioned Cleveland, right? Cleveland is really the only team that, I guess, at this moment in time, right? Because anything can change.
Right.
50-game season or 60-game season, that's not what we're doing this year. We're doing 162. It's a long way to the finish. People have to remember that. But Cleveland, I mean, they've been no-hit twice this year, but it seems like the pitching, not only in Chicago, but everywhere in the majors, is just off the charts this year. What are you noticing in Chicago and just around the baseball world in the phenomenon of what's going on with more strikeouts than hits in 2021 so far?
Yeah, I mean, pitching has been great. I mean, I think it's just hard to label anything right now as, you know, conclusive because it's so early into the season. But I think, you know, the pitching has been a little bit ahead of the hitting. And, you know, I mean, people are kind of balancing out for 162-game season. This isn't a sprint. This is a marathon this year, you know. So they're going to have to, you know, get through that. But it's hard to say one way or the other, like what's, you know, the conclusive thing. But, I mean, yeah, it's been an offensively down season. It seems like, excuse me, every day there's a pitcher going deep into a game with a no-hitter possible, right? Maybe not every day, but two times a week, three times a week. We had Bieber yesterday, and I'm sure there'll be someone else before the weekend's out. So, yeah, it's hard for me to, like, not watching every game to draw, like, a general conclusion to it. But, yeah, it does seem like the pitching is a step ahead of the hitting so far.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys had your own no-hitter that happened, Carlos
right.
Rodon. And tell me a little bit about this guy's story, because he comes out of nowhere. I believe, wasn't he DFA'd? What was the story behind Carlos Rodon, and what has really changed for him in 2021?
Yeah, he was, you know, the third pick overall in 2014 out of NC State. He had the pedigree of a front of the rotation type of guy. Has had a couple solid seasons, nothing spectacular, and just been hurt. Has never been able to stay healthy. You know, he had shoulder surgery. He had Tommy John surgery. He came back in the shortened season last year. Made a couple of starts and then was gone for most of the rest of the season with shoulder and back soreness. Came back and pitched out of the bullpen three times. Twice were, you know, once in the playoffs and once in Cleveland, where they lost four in a row in Cleveland. Bad situations. Not bad situations, bad results. Maybe not the fairest situation to him. Got non-tendered in December and they brought him back before spring training. 1 year, $3 million deal. And my goodness, he's, you know, it's so hard to say right now because May 28th, 29th, I guess, 28th. And I mean, he's probably, you know, one of the Cy Young favorites in the AL right now. He's just been unbelievable. May, I mean, his record, I guess May is a, for him is a good indication how wins and losses don't always matter for starting pitchers, because he's like 1-2 and has just been lights out. His last two starts, I believe, against the Yankees and the Cardinals, who are both, you know, playoff contenders, 23 strikeouts in 12 innings, no walks, and I think one run allowed, and that was on a home run to Tommy Edman. Yeah, he still got the loss the other day to the Cardinals because they shut out the Sox. So, yeah, he's made mechanics changes, but I think it's just mindset. I think he just realizes now is the time to kind of show what he's all about. This is the last year of control the Sox had. Well, I mean, they signed him to a one-year deal, so they're not tendering, but this, he becomes a free agent after this season. So it's a good time to have that kind of year. But, you know, working with Ethan Katz as a new pitching coach, and I think he's just found something and been, you know, beyond tremendous so far for the White Sox.
Yeah, and whatever Ethan Katz is doing, I mean, we just saw the showdown of high school pitchers earlier this week with the with Jack Flaherty and Lucas Giolito. I mean, he has some type of magic going on there. So Carlos Rodon, whatever he found, is looking really good right now. It's looking really good. And I forgot what the stat exactly was. Maybe you remember, Scott. But he started that game with, I believe, 5 straight strikeouts against the Yankees this week. And that was the first time that that happened since, I forget what Hall of Fame pitcher it was. I want to say it was maybe like Koufax or something. It was something ridiculous that hadn't happened in such a long time that he struck out the first 5 Yankee batters. It hasn't happened. So that's really impressive. I mean, it's the Yankees, right? When you do something to the Yankees, people take notice. So whatever he has going on, he needs to stick with it for sure. But I mean, let's stick with a little bit. I want to dive into this a little bit, with Mike Schilt, with the ejection that happened earlier this week with the series, with Tony La Russa taking on his former club, for the first time since coming back to pitching. And he got ejected because of the incident with Giovanni Gallegos, being asked for a hat change. Joe West was involved. What was your take on the situation, and could you shed like a little bit more light on what's going on in the game of baseball with that?
Well, just from what I understand and what I saw from, you know, the transcript of the interview with Joe West after the game, is that, you know, Gallegos came in. I forgot which one of the other umpires noticed something on the hat. And I think Gallegos said it was, I forgot what he said it was off the top of my head, but, you know, they wanted to switch it. And I guess, you know, Mike Schilt wasn't kind of, I didn't realize at that point that it was the umpires who had kind of, you know, brought that about. And, you know, I think Joe West said he said a few bad words and he was ejected. But I do know, you know, I think we've all seen the stories and the quotes from Commissioner Manfred that, you know, they're cracking down on that this year. Now, I'm not saying Gallegos did anything wrong. It probably was perfectly innocent. And, you know, they just needed to change the hat, and the hat was taken away, so I'm guessing it'll be checked. But that is a focus of what they're going to do this year. So, you know, I think it kind of fell under that category. He's pitched great for the Cardinals from the little I've seen of him this year, and I think he pitched decently. I think he was in the game last night against Arizona, as a matter of fact, and pitched decently. But he got through that with no problem. You know, it was kind of maybe a lot to do about nothing. But again, it's a focus that, you know, the commissioner had talked about earlier in the season.
Yeah, I mean, they put out the memo, right, and they were going to pull balls and check for substances, right? So that's kind of the backstory on that. And Mike Schilt, he had kind of some choice words that kind of has everyone, like, panicking a little bit. He came out in his post-game interview, and he said, "Why do I take exception to that?" This is Mike Schilt after he got ejected for the Gallegos hat incident, being asked to change his hat. He said, "Why do I take exception to that? Because this is baseball's dirty little secret, and it's the wrong time and the wrong arena to expose it." And because of baseball taking that stance with that memo prior to opening day that they were going to be pulling balls. And I even remember early on in the first week of the season, there was a quote-unquote incident. It wasn't really an incident, but with Trevor Bauer being called out as one of the balls, and then he's like, "Whoa, why are you signaling me out?" And it was a Ken Rosenthal story or anything like that. But anyway, so Trevor Bauer, that happened at the beginning of the year, and then it kind of fizzled out. Like, we hadn't really seen anything you know, come out, pop off the page up until this happened with Joe West. How do you think that baseball is going to move forward? Because it seems like there is something going around in the league. I mean, I think a lot of people know about it, but it's just kind of been swept under the rug. But now MLB seems to be focusing on it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what, you know, what actions are taken moving forward. But I think, you know, any pitcher or hitter who gets called upon to have something checked is not going to be thrilled, right? I mean, whether you're doing something or not, it's kind of gamesmanship unless you kind of know something. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen moving forward. I can't remember even seeing this happen much this year in terms of involved with the White Sox, who are, you know, who I watch pretty much primarily. And even some of the other games, I've seen some Cubs games in Chicago, and you don't see a ton of that happening. And I think, you know, what happened on Wednesday, right? Wednesday was just that the umpire noticed it. And I don't think it was anything more than the umpire noticed the hat and just said he needed to change the hat. I don't think there was anything like kind of, I want to say, sinister behind it or like, you know, past that. So I think it'll just be normal. I don't think it's going to be, you know, every day. It's not going to be like Naked Gun where they're going to, you know, the movie where they're going to come out and check them, you know, start to finish. I think when the situation calls for it, they'll do it. And otherwise, they'll just let them play baseball.
Speaking about Chicago baseball, you talked about the Cubs a little bit. Did you catch that that crazy play by Javier Baez? I think it was yesterday. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see it, and I thought two things. I mean, Baez is you know, just electric. I mean, he almost cost himself, though, by doing a little umpiring. I think he was so excited when Contreras made it home, not realizing that they still just threw the ball back to first. He would have been out still, even with all that.
Right.
But again, I don't understand, you know, why. I think Craig was the first baseman, right? Why the heck did you not just step on the base, you know? I mean, it was a bad play by a team that's not very good, but it doesn't take away from the fact that Baez is just crazy electric player who just, you know, I'm not sure if any other player would have that, not any other player, how many other players would have that wherewithal or that thought process or that energy to keep going back and not, you know, cross over home. I mean, you see guys stop and move back a little bit and they're just like, okay, whatever, I'm done. You know, they get tagged out.
Right.
Baez carried that all the way back to home where I think you had like two base runners within like 2 or 3 feet of each other. But again, I know there's crowd there and everything else, but I'm not sure how someone else didn't yell to the first baseman and yell to Craig, just step on the base. You know, that's all he had to do. I mean, Baez could have backpedaled, you know, to the Allegheny River and it wouldn't have mattered as long as Craig went over and stepped on first base and the inning was over. But, right. And that led to two runs for the Cubs who won the game by one run, you know, because he got the second when they threw the ball, when the catcher threw the ball away and then half blooped the single in the next at bat. And it was, you know, it went from what should have been 1-0 in the inning over to 3-0 Cubs. And it, you know, it was a difference in the game. So that's the thing which you can say is you can put a lot of blame on the Pittsburgh Pirates for bad baseball, but you got to give, you know, Baez credit for making something happen that led to two runs. It wasn't just kind of like a funny play that just gets thrown away and that's it. It actually probably helped produce the win for the Cubs yesterday.
Yeah, and when I was watching it, I was like, is that legal? Like I was like, can you run all the way backwards? Because like you said, you see guys slow up or you see them like backtrack a little bit. I've never seen someone go 75 feet and then track back 70. Like, I've never seen that before.
Right. Yeah, I think I don't know the exact, but I think as long as it doesn't cross back over home, right? Or
right.
Get out of the baseline. And I watch it, and he really, for the most part, stayed in the baseline. Yeah, maybe took a step here or there, but as he was backpedaling, and I don't know, maybe Craig just lost track of the outs. Maybe he lost track of the moment. Maybe he, you know, was caught up because it was Baez going backwards and, you know, he knows he can move a little. I don't know. It's hard to, I didn't see any quotes of him after the game, but it's kind of hard to explain why he can, you know, I mean, just not, I mean, I guess it's easy for me to say and laugh about it now because I'm not in the moment there, but you would think that's pretty basic that there'd be like 30 guys on the Pirates team yelling, step on first base. You know?
Right. Like somebody has to be yelling it. Like he can't just, you would assume someone is saying step on first. And maybe he thought like, oh, he went out of the base path. Maybe that's what went through.
It could be.
Head.
Yeah, it
maybe
could be. But I mean, that's the old thing about don't umpire the game yourself, right?
Right.
And play until the whistle blows sort of thing.
All right, we're talking with Scott Merkin, beat writer for the Chicago White Sox for MLB.com. Real quick, before we wrap up, Scott, we've got to talk about, we talk about Baez, we talk about all the big names, but the new kids on the block for Chicago, Yermin Mercedes. I mean, this guy came onto the scene. Not everybody was talking about him at first. Now everyone's talking about him, and he's kind of fizzling out a little bit, but, I mean, this kid start to his career looks fantastic right now. What's the scouting report on Mercedes?
Well, you know, as he says, just keep being Yermin. That's his key thing. And you know, it's interesting because he had a little bit of a slump after the home run on the 3-0 pitch, which has been talked about ad nauseum now against Williams Estudio. And you know, I think until yesterday's game, he had gone 8 games without a home run or an extra base hit and just 1 RBI. Now, he does more than just, you know, hit for power. He's, you know, he's a 340, 345 hitter this year. But last night, he hit a laser home run, one of the hardest balls hit in the StatCast era by a White Sox player, and then drove in 2 later in the game. So, I mean, you know, he's kind of surprised everyone, not just with his start. You know, I've talked about this a lot of times, but he's, you know, Tony La Russa had a thing that first weekend in Anaheim where he wanted everyone to play that weekend. He did not want to let anyone come from spring training just to sit for 4 or 5 games. So he got Mercedes in, and Mercedes went 5 for 5. Then he went 3 for 3, and he's never been out of the lineup since, pretty much, you know. So it's been a huge boost for that team because, you know, there's no Jimenez, there's no Robert. So it's a great add-on. He's a fun kid to watch. You know, you like his machinations even when he's taking a pitch at the plate. But, you know, he knew there was going to be some slumps. I think he was like 2 for 18 going into last night and bounced back. And the mark of a good hitter is being able to weather those slumps and not let him get too long and not let him knock. I mean, no one thought he was going to hit .410 this year. And in all honesty, he may not hit, you know, .340 this year either. So, but he has been a great contributor and really his first chance to play, you know, first chance to play regularly ever at the major league level.
And you mentioned again, Jimenez and Robert, right? And that's why this opportunity presented itself for Mercedes. He's taking it and running with it. What's the timetable on both of their returns? I mean, is it closer to the end of the season, if at all this season?
That's something that, you know, Rick Hahn, the general manager, was kind of clear about when they had the surgery, went down as Robert did, and then they put a timetable. I think he said both Robert would not do baseball activities between 12 to 16 weeks. That's 3 to 4 months from the beginning of May. And then Jimenez would be reevaluated at 12 weeks. He had the surgery right before the season started. So that's April, May, June. So we won't know anything until the end of June. And yeah, I think even asking at this point, you know, we've seen them both on Instagram. They both seem very upbeat. I think Robert just got rid of his crutches according to his Instagram post, but you know, until that time period, you know, asking is just going to be met with either non-response or, you know, nothing to update until, you know, this certain day. So we'll see. You know, they're great athletes. They're in great physical condition. But again, the Sox are not going to push these guys just to get them back for the rest of the season. You know, I mean, if it means getting them both back in September, then so be it, you know, or late August or mid-August, whatever. But they're not going to push them just to get them in, you know, to start the second half if they're not completely ready.
Especially if they keep producing how they have been the first games, right? There's no reason to.
Yeah,
rush.
I mean, I would rather get them both healthy for what you think is going to be a playoff run than push them just to try and, you know, pad the division lead, which they should, you know, barring something unexpected, they should, you know, be able to win this division. So I think you kind of slow play to make sure they're 110% and bring them back at that point.
Lastly, Scott, before I let you go, man, I saw that this story broke yesterday, Jesse Sanchez of MLB.com and the White Sox, they're looking at what they're calling the Cuban version of Shohei Ohtani. Do you know anything about this kid, Oscar Colas?
Yeah, I think he has pitched and hit, you know, in his previous career. I believe he played in Japan, right, for a little bit, and he's a tremendous talent, like Yoki Cespedes, who is the top international prospect this year, who the Sox signed out of Cuba. I don't know, you know, anything, Pat, what he's going to do, you know, once he gets into the Sox organization. Like, will they just say, you're focused on playing the outfield and go from there? Will they let him do both? I mean, you know, the signing period has not started yet, so the Sox absolutely will not comment on, you know, whether that's official or not. But one thing you can say is the Sox have a tremendous Cuban connection. And don't overlook the importance, besides being an MVP, besides being a great leader in the clubhouse, of Jose Abreu, because, you know, he has meant so much to the younger guys who have come, you know, from Cuba to the White Sox. Yoan Moncada. Well, Yoan Moncada was in Boston first, obviously, but Luis Robert, you know, now Cespedes, even Jimenez, who's not Cuban, but, you know, the Latin American kids overall, he's a great influence. And I think just the team overall, you know, they won the World Series in 05 with Jose Contreras and Orlando El Duque Hernandez. Minnie Minoso is an absolute White Sox legend. You know, Alexi Ramirez had great years playing shortstop for the White Sox, Dion Vicedo in the outfield. So the White Sox truly are, you know, the Cuban connection there. And, you know, Colas and Cespedes could, I think that they pronounced it, Colas is his last name, should be, you know, a great boon to them in the future as they continue on with what they've already built.
All right, Scott, great stuff. We made it through an interview, didn't even mention La Russa. So I think
there
that's impressive.
Go. How about that?
How about that? And before I let you go, did you see those unis, those Southside unis? They look pretty nice, right?
Yeah, they look good. They look good, and they'll be featured, I think, next weekend. And I think they're already selling, you know, tremendously. So it's not surprising. Yeah, they did a nice job with those. They really did.
Definitely. All right, Scott, thank you for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. And you have a good one. We'll talk down the line, man.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Again, that was Scott Merkin of MLB.com, beat writer for the Chicago White Sox. Go ahead and give him a follow on Twitter to stay up to date on all your Chicago White Sox news, because it has been a whirlwind in the Windy City, no pun intended. But yeah, a lot of things going on the South Side, and those unis, you guys got to check out those unis. Check everything that we just talked about. You can check it out on Twitter. Follow Scott Merkin at Scott Merkin on Twitter. So I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation with Scott. It's always a pleasure to have him on, talk some Shy Sox baseball, and hope you guys enjoyed this one. Stay tuned for next week. We're going to be back and rolling. Took a little bit of that vacation, as I mentioned, and we're back at full 100%. So you guys have a good one. Be safe, and I'll talk to you next time.